While a lot of these ethnic media outlets are making it work, they are stretched thin, and we really want to help support them so that they don't burn out and that they can keep doing the amazing storytelling.
Two of the greatest challenges local ethnic media face are funding and reaching a wider audience. So identifying a potential source of revenue whose core mission is to reach every corner of a community presents an amazing opportunity for collaboration. I'm Michael O'Connell. Welcome to It's All Journalism. Maya Chupkov is the Media and Democracy Program Manager for California Common Cause, a nonpartisan national advocacy group working for democratic solutions and equal rights. She's here today to talk about a recent resolution passed by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors that urged city departments to spend at least half of their advertising and outreach budgets on community and ethnic media outlets. Maya, welcome to It's All Journalism.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So usually, you know, I'm talking to a journalist and I ask them, you know, how they got interested in journalism. Much of your background seems to be in public advocacy and strategic communications. You know, what attracted you to that path?
Yeah. So I started my career in PR, and that was kind of when I first started interacting with journalists. And I've always just admired journalists, and it was really fun working on stories with them while I was doing PR. And then I went back to grad school because I wanted to study policy. And so I kind of combined the two after grad school by doing strategic communications for first an affordable housing advocacy group called the Council of Community Housing Organizations. And what I learned during that job is the journalism landscape was really changing a lot. Like from my first year working to my second year, I just saw it was so much harder for reporters to really dig into issues around housing and their reporting. I kept seeing journalists being laid off or kind of come out of the housing beat and merge with other issues. So I just kind of saw the journalism industry from that perspective really change a lot. And so when I saw this position open at California Common Cause, I was like, oh my gosh, like I really want to help strengthen and sustain local journalism because I know how important it is to have people know what's going on in the world, whether it's housing. I also did a stint at the California Public Utilities Commission where, you know, I helped reporters cover issues around water and energy and communications. And so it just made me realize like how important it is to have a lot of reporters, not just covering the issues, but also keeping our public officials accountable.
Okay. And actually, I'm thinking about it, but before we get much further, I did want to ask you, because we had a little trouble at the beginning of our recording, getting things set up, but you're also a podcaster. Can you tell me about your podcast?
Yeah. So my podcast is called Proud Stutter, and I interview people who stutter from all over the world, and I release episodes every other Friday. And it's really just a platform for people who stutter to share their stories. And the purpose of the podcast is to shift the conversation around stuttering.
How long have you been doing it?
So this is my third year. So it's going to be 3 years in October.
Excellent. Good for you. Good for you.
Thank you.
Anyway, back to our main topic. So can you tell me a little bit about the mission of Common Cause? You know, what does the organization set out to do, and how does it sort of accomplish that?
Yeah, so California Common Cause, we're the California chapter of the National Common Cause. And so there's our national team that works on policies on the federal level, and then there's state chapters that work on issues on the statewide and local level. So California Common Cause our main goal is to build a democracy that includes everyone. And so our core issue areas are voting rights, redistricting reform, government transparency, money in politics, and our newest one is media and democracy, which is the program that I run. And all of our program areas really aims to create governments at all levels that are accountable to and reflective of California's diverse communities. So one example is, you know, for our media and democracy program, we focus on implementing and passing policies to strengthen and sustain community and ethnic journalism locally and statewide.
Well, that's cool. So I guess as an example of this is this resolution. First of all, tell me a little bit about the resolution and, you know, how did it come about? What problems was it seeking to address?
Yeah, so the San Francisco Board of Supervisors passed a resolution urging, like you said, for greater city support and resources to be directed to community and ethnic journalism outlets. Historically, these outlets have been excluded from city advertising dollars, even though, you know, like, there are a lot of San Francisco news deserts. And so we're really trying to just bridge those gaps with this resolution. And one of the things that is really core to this resolution is it urges that every city department that has a discretionary advertising and outreach budget, that half of that be dedicated to spending on local and ethnic media in San Francisco. So how this came about, California's a Common Cause. I've been organizing and facilitating a coalition of locally owned, independent, local and ethnic media outlets in San Francisco since the fall of 2019. And through those group meetings, we've kind of explored different policy options and really landed on unlocking advertising dollars. And the reason why we kind of honed in on this policy solution is because it's budget neutral. We're not asking for new money. We're just asking for a more equitable redistribution of current spending. And two, we think that once this is passed, we'll be able to see immediate, you know, immediate results, especially, you know, as we're, our core focus is implementation and making sure departments are aware of this new program. And so that's kind of how the idea came about. And so our first step towards this resolution was we worked with San Francisco Supervisor Dorsey on getting the data. We really wanted to see how the city currently was working with advertising and where the money was going. So Supervisor Dorsey commissioned a report from the Budget and Legislative Analyst Office, and I worked closely with his legislative aide on this report. And the report showed that a huge amount of advertising spending was only going to a handful of outlets. And so we saw that as like, we need to expand the pie and make sure that the city was aware that there are so many other media outlets that could help them reach certain communities that were being overlooked. And so once we had that report out there, that's when we started working on this resolution. And what really kind of helped get our resolution to the finish line was publishing our own independent report on San Francisco's community information needs. Because while we knew kind of where the city was at with spending, we really wanted to hear from San Francisco's most marginalized community members to see what gaps they were seeing and bridging both what the community wants and also what policies could help fill those gaps and give more resources to local journalism so they could help fill those gaps.
So I know you said you reached out to ethnic newsrooms. What was it they were telling you? Were they struggling to reach certain audiences, or was it just a more of a financial need that something like this would help them, or at least spread the word that, you know, these organizations are out there?
Yeah, we spoke to a handful of ethnic media outlets as part of our report, and we have several ethnic media outlets in our coalition. And the common theme is they're doing amazing reporting, but they're just stretched so thin. Like, you know, if they could get just more, you know, more revenue from the city in advertising, they might be able to, you know, hire more freelancers to do more stories or hire someone full the time. And so while a lot of these ethnic media outlets are, you know, they are making it work, they are stretched thin, and we really want to help support them so that they don't burn out and that they can keep doing the amazing storytelling.
So was there any pushback from the other news organizations that might have been benefiting from, you know, receiving more than the ethnic organizations before this resolution was passed?
Yeah, so this was a collaborative effort among a lot of even media that was already getting the advertising money. They supported this because we realized as a group that we need to support everyone. Like, instead of being combative, we're really collaborative in San Francisco. And so even though, like, maybe, you know, they might not get as much, they do see that the value, because the goal is really to expand the pie as well. So that the more we educate city departments about our news outlets, we don't only foresee that, you know, there'll be a redistribution, but we actually see that the pie of advertising dollars expand as more departments see that the value in partnering with local and ethnic media.
Interesting. During your study, was there anything that addressed the maybe areas, not necessarily locations, but the types of stories that were not being done, or the way that communities were being covered or not being covered? It's kind of a nuance that I'm asking. It's a little bit different than, hey, you know, why aren't you paying attention to these? It's more what type of things are not being covered.
Yes, I love that question, because we found several gaps in the local news ecosystem in San Francisco, and I'll highlight a few of them. One is we did a focus group with Filipino residents, and there actually is no San Francisco-based outlet for the Filipino community. So that's one community that isn't really, you know, they don't have their own news outlet that's covering issues by them for them. Another focus group we did was with the indigenous population in San Francisco. Again, there isn't a San Francisco news outlet that's writing by an indigenous outlet for the indigenous community. And then the third highlight I'll say is we did two focus groups in Hunters Point, which is very much like separated from the rest of the city, and they don't have a lot of resources at all. And so what we learned in the focus groups in Hunters Point is the stories that they would read about their community was mostly negative. And so what they wanted to see more of is all the positive stories that are happening, like their daughter getting on the honor roll, doing a new mural in the community, having more arts coverage. And what I realized is that there's so many artists in that community and their stories are not being shared.
And what's also interesting about that is, I mean, maybe there's a, you know, an artist website or media organization that isn't exposed to that community. And, you know, maybe that's something that as those stories are sort of spread, it's not sort of an uncommon occurrence. You know, I've done a number of interviews with different news outlets, not just necessarily ethnic outlets, but people trying to reach certain audiences. And this concern that the news, you know, well, maybe there are a lot of stories, but the news doesn't necessarily reflect the positive aspects of a community. It focuses more on crime or, you know, property value or, you know, lack of resources, et cetera. But there are people there who live there, and their stories can be as rich as anybody else's stories. They just have to be reported that way. So, you know, I would ask normally, so how have things gone? But you actually kind of just rolled this out earlier in March.
Yes, and we're already hitting the ground running with implementation. One of the things that we really want to see the city do is have more transparency around how city departments spend on advertising, because right now, one of the things we found in the report from the Budget and Legislative Analyst Office is a lot of the advertising spending is not publicly available because they're buried in these larger PR and marketing contracts. And so what we want to do is make the data around all the spending, no matter if it's in a contract or not, we want to make that publicly available so we can be sure how much is actually being spent when it comes to community and ethnic media. And another thing about the report is it only really tracked the 1 year. And so we really wanted to have a more robust reporting requirement as a next step.
So let's go back to your podcast a little bit. I'm really kind of intrigued by this. You know, what made you decide that this was something that you wanted to do, that you wanted to do a podcast?
So I started the podcast during the pandemic, as a lot of us did. We picked up new hobbies. And so my hobby was podcasting because I just felt like I needed a creative outlet. I was really down in the dumps during COVID. I didn't really like my job that much. I was working at the California PUC and just wasn't really feeling fulfilled there. And so I thought podcasting could be a positive creative outlet for me and something that was low barrier. Like, you know, I could just start it, you know. And so a lot went into me launching it. Like, it actually took me like around 6 to 7 months to get it off the ground. And like, I didn't just wake up one morning and start a podcast. I really wanted to like learn as much as I could and really have like a big launch around it. And so did a lot of that. And then, yeah, we launched on International Stuttering Awareness Day, October 2021. And ever since, I've been releasing episodes every other Friday, and it has been the most fulfilling thing I've ever done. I really feel like I found my purpose in life, and that's to, you know, help people share their stories about their stutter, because often it can be a really big source of shame and discomfort. And stuttering is so complex and unique, and there's just so many layers to it. So every interview I have on the podcast, I learned something new.
So how do you get your guests for that?
So in the beginning, I would just like reach out and meet a bunch of people, whether like through other events that other organizations did or just by word of mouth. But now people just email me all the time. So I have like a long list of people that I plan to interview. And so I'm never worried about being short of anyone, which is pretty cool.
Do you find that people have sort of the same issues, or is it just sort of each person has their own challenge with stuttering?
I would say that there are a lot of patterns. Like one example is a lot of people who stutter talk about getting the look. And the look is really like when you're interacting with someone for the first time and they've never heard a person stutter, there's kind of a look of like shock and like, are you okay? Like when you do a kind of it, when you have a big stutter episode. So that's a common pattern. Another common story I get is, you know, there's a lot of, in elementary school, there would be people who stuttered would get pulled out of class to attend speech therapy during the school day. And so that was a common traumatic experience for a lot of us, just being singled out and people wondering like where we were going and all that stuff. So yeah, there are common stories, but what's unique about each episode is there's so much intersectionality around stuttering, like just the cultural experiences around stuttering, how class intersects with stuttering, you know, having siblings that also stutter, having a parent. So there's just so many layers to stuttering, and it really is a different conversation each time, because like there's so much humanity in stuttering, and it can connect with so many different things.
Yeah. I would imagine it's like so many things that, you know, if you think a person is blind, or, you know, you have one impression of what their life might be like, but it's probably very, very different from every person. But I would imagine, you know, with the platform that you have, that's something that helps you, but I'm sure that it also helps the people who are guests and the people who listen.
Yeah. You know, one thing I get a lot is when listening to the podcast, like they feel less alone, because it can be a very isolating experience to have a stutter. Like I felt like I was the only one in the world who stuttered when I was younger, because I was the only one I knew who stuttered. And so having a resource like a podcast that you can listen to and expose your kids to, and just let them know that you're not the only one, like there's other people like you out there. It's a very comforting feeling.
Yeah. And the way you described it, being taken out of class and everything, it seems like the exact opposite thing that you want. You don't necessarily want to be excluded, but doing that in the auspices of helping you isn't actually maybe helping you, unfortunately. And just, you know, gives you that more sense of being separate. But I think it's a great thing.
And one example of the getting pulled out of class, I'm filming a documentary right now about a person who stutters. And we actually went back to film him visiting his elementary school for the first time, you know, since he was in elementary school. He's 39 now. And he went back to the room that he used to have speech therapy in. And it was just such an emotional experience just seeing him like be in that room and kind of all the memories like flooding back of like the speech therapist wanting to like fix his stutter and him feeling broken and ostracized and the bullying. And yeah, so it's definitely a very traumatic experience.
Well, I congratulate you on doing a podcast. You know, there are a lot of people who say they don't want to do a podcast, and there are people who, you know, launch a podcast, maybe only do a couple of episodes, but, you know, you put the hours in. So, you know, I'm sure you've reaped the benefits of all the money that you're getting. But podcasting is for a lot of things. Some people can make a lot of money off of it. Very few really do. But there are a lot of other things that are richness. One of the things when I go to podcasting conferences that I hear talked about is this phrase that they put out there and they ask people to complete. Let me ask you that, to finish this phrase. Because of my podcast.
Because of my podcast, I am able to give people who stutter a voice and lift up their stories.
Excellent. Excellent. That's a perfect answer. They're always perfect answers, because that's the thing about being a podcaster is, you know, once you get to the other side and you're doing it and you're doing it regularly, suddenly things happen, good things happen. And, you know, again, maybe it's not money, but there are great things that can come out of something like this. And it doesn't have to be podcasting. It could be, you know, any venture that you take the initiative and create it and launch it yourself, you know, that's super, super positive. You'll reap rewards from it. But to sort of wrap up our discussion about the resolution, you know, somebody hearing about this, about the resolution that was passed in San Francisco, you know, what advice would you give to maybe other communities where this might be something that, hey, maybe you should go to the local, you know, governmental body and see where they're spending their money? What advice would you give to them?
Yeah, I would first say, you know, see if there's other local media outlets or ethnic media outlets in your area and just start organizing, because that was our first step, was just getting all of the locally owned independent publications together. And some have already like been working together and some haven't. And so like kind of building a coalition, I would say, is step one. Step two is finding a champion in your local government. If you want to do it statewide, finding a local, you know, statewide champion and having, you know, an idea of like what policy solution you want to work on, whether it be the advertising program that we did. There's also, you know, other ideas as well. And then also do community listening. I think that's key, and seeing how that ties in to your policy solution and understanding the system, like work with your champion on understanding like where that the money is going, get that data so you can make a better case for why a resolution is necessary. And then once you kind of have all those components, then you can work with your champion on language. And, you know, we're at like me at Common Cause California, like I'm always open to helping answer any questions about our process here and really sharing the lessons learned. A lot of that is in our report, Local Voices on local News, which you can find on our website, but always happy to have one-on-one conversations as well with folks interested.
Okay. Well, we'll include a link to the report and maybe even your email and also to your podcast. Maya, thanks for coming on the podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the people who report the news. You can find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. While you're visiting our website, sign up for the It's All Journalism newsletter. To make sure you don't miss an episode of It's All Journalism, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, Amazon, and pretty much anywhere good podcasts are found. If you'd like to help us grow our podcast, like and share our episodes on social media. Look for us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. It takes a lot of people to create an episode of It's All Journalism. Nicola Grisco is our audio producer. Amber Healy writes our web content. Amelia Brust is our booking manager. Steph Thomas manages our social media. Nick Dupre composed our theme music. Carolyn Bilewski designed our logo. And I'm your host, Michael O'Connell. Thanks for listening.